VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 421, recorded on April 18th, 421st edition of the TV Gaming Podcast and the 254th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Fell.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Dirk.
VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So, yeah, it's been a boring week. Or at least a boring few days. Nothing's really going on. That's why this is probably going to be a short-ish podcast, although we seem to pad it out with pop culture, so maybe we can do that too. I'm going to go first on what you've been playing this week. I've actually started, or at least restarted, Pillars of Eternity. Since I was $147 backer, I think it's about time I started doing it in full, and I'm doing story time mode so that it's a little easier. Although it's not as easy as I think. It's normal, but you get to keep all the firewood or the campsites that you want. If you're going to do a story mode, just let me just do an insta kill of everything I face, like I can do in Baldur's Gate, you know.
Just have a I win button then. Yeah. In that case,
just tell, you know, they all die. What's next? Although I will say this, you know, the first two companions you meet, they died because I kept on running over that fire trap, but I didn't care. Just let them die. I was a mage, and I made it to that town where they had the tree, and you talk to the old dwarf woman, and I made two friends. Another wizard, I'm a wizard, he's a wizard, and a snarky guy who says he's going to be the 21st guy hung on the tree, and that's where I stopped. I will continue. I only started yesterday, so. Like I said, if I backed it for $147, I better start playing it.
Yeah, get your money's worth, right?
I mean, I got the big box full of stuff, which I still have here, so I might as well actually enjoy the actual game, you know?
Yeah.
I'm surprised for $147 I didn't qualify for a season pass. You'd think that it would have been included, but who am I to complain? Chris Avalon is a friend, so I just helped him out, although I really like Tim Schafer. That's why I spent $800 on Psychonauts 2.
Wow.
But it comes with a book bag with all of the merit badges on the back.
Well, that better be a really high-quality book bag.
You think I'm ever going to wear it? No. Well, I probably would wear it to E3 next year or something. Because right. I don't know. Actually, I think the game's coming out in 2018.
Might as well get some mileage out of it.
Yeah, but that's just one short. You know, that's short of being one of those high, really high rent, $1,000 backers. You know, that I wish I was rich. Everybody does. They wish they could be rich and back it for the $10,000 most valuable backing thing. Don't you ever fantasize about that? Yeah, I'm going to back it for $10,000.
That'd be sweet.
I will go and have dinner with all the developers, and I will get my own character, and I'll get my own thing, and I'll get to name, and I'll do some voice acting, and all the benefits that come from spending a crap ton of money on a project. I almost did that for MST3K. I'm glad I didn't. Because that looks like a disaster waiting to happen. I want to give a little shout out to everybody here. I am one of the diehard Misties. I mean, I started in 1990. My number is in five figures, and by that I mean 10,000 something. And that's only because I signed up a couple of months late. I didn't sign up to the fan club until late. I said, "Oh wait, maybe I should join the fan club," because I think I would have been in the triple digits of fans. You know. Maybe the first non-Minnesotan fan. So, yeah. So the thing is that I do not like where MST3K is going. And MST3K already had... You know, the thing about MST3K is it was at a time when you weren't doing that. No one did that. No one did gag dubs. It's not even gag dubs, it's riffing. You know, no one did that. Now, we have that. And the thing is that the ones who made it so popular are doing riff tracks. I mean, you have to keep something in mind. Season 2 of MST3K wasn't very good. you know. It was season three and on, and coincidentally, that's when Mike Nelson took over as head writer. Because he happens to be a little bit more nasty and sharp in a good way. He's a little bit more, you know, not that they didn't have some edge in the second season, but Mike gave it a lot of edge. And Joel Hodgson said that had Mike been with him a little bit longer, he would have been trapped in space from the very start, not Joel Hodgson, which is interesting. Not that I'm going to get into Joel versus Mike, which is sort of like getting into Kirk versus Picard. But, you know, I mean, here's the thing is that I've been used to Mike since 1995. That's not going to change. That's over 11 years. And I've been doing MST3K for 25 years. Oh, wait, my math is bad. Oh, no, that is... No, it's 20 years. I'm sorry. I've been with Mike for 21 years. And I've been with MST3K for 25 years. Actually,
you say
26.
You've been with MST3K. You've been watching. Yeah, okay.
Not with it. Well, yeah. I was with it before it became cool. And here's the thing. MST3K was the nichiest nerd geek thing that you could find. Even though it won a Peabody in, like, I don't know, it's like 1992 or something like that. It was still a niche among niche because basically, as they described it, it was just a Cowtown puppet show.
Yeah.
You know, and a science fiction puppet show. It was sort of like being into anime in 1968, you know, and being a fan of Speed Racer or something.
Well, anime has only recently started to become cool, I think.
Anime has been mainstream since the 70s. And I'm
No.
I'm going to give you a few bars of something.
Not when I've been made fun of for watching it in the 90s. So no.
Well, I mean, everybody knew, go Speed Racer, go Speed Racer, go. And you know, maybe you got the second, the backlash. Because every kid thought Battle of the Planets was ultra cool, and all the anime then. And then the 80s happened, and then in the 90s, which is probably when you got the backlash, Voltron, and all the other, you know, shows with... I don't know what the term for it is, I'm pretty sure you do, in which five units join up to become one giant robot, you know, and they have a term for that show. And it's not the original name of the Power Rangers. Oh, what were the original Power Rangers? The Super Saiyan? No.
Super Senkai Rangers.
Senkai, right. They had a term. They have a term for that. All animes have terms for everything. Just look at TV tropes. You know. So, yeah. So what happens was that you got caught in the backlash of the 80s, it sounds like. When people were saying, oh, yeah, that Japanese crap. And then it became new again with a whole new audience. And you got to ride that wave. And now it's basically American culture, even if it's Japanese culture. Because if you notice, all the up-and-coming comic book artists, they have that big-eyed Bambi look and that style, that manga style.
Yeah, they just... all I know is I see hundreds of posts about Dragon Ball Z on Facebook and Yu-Gi-Oh! And all the other crap, and of course Pokemon.
I can't stand Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, I loved all that stuff.
Ew. I mean, all they do is scream and pose and then make up powers as they go along.
See, that's later Dragon Ball Z, though. Early Dragon Ball Z...
Now you're sounding like, oh, yes, well, you know, that's late. That's
I know,
Dragon
but
Ball
you talk
Z,
about
you know,
Joel and Mike. I'm going to talk about
version.
Dragon Ball.
Yeah, let TJ have input.
I know, but the way you made it sound like... It's like, yes, that's early. That's early Dragon...
There is a distinct difference.
Yes.
There is, I agree.
And the difference comes as soon as they start going deep into the Saiyans, and that's when they stop having, like, adventures, and they stop having... For one thing, like, if you look at early Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z, they had dinosaurs. The world was full of dinosaurs and
they
crazy things like that. And as soon as you get into, like, a certain part of Dragon Ball Z, where the Saiyans start showing up, and it ends up being all about that from then on... through the rest of everything in Dragon Ball GT and everything.
Thing about Goku beating Superman crap.
It's not about adventure anymore. It's about fights. And that's
well,
the
distinct
shift.
Well, let me ask you a question
shift.
Then. Is it because of the card game?
Mm.
I mean, when you focus on all the fights, you know, it sounds like they're just kowtowing to people. I know that's how it is with Digimon, especially, in which, and I don't watch Digimon, but I do know is that they go into the card and say, oh, my Digimon can do all this, and they show the card. If you couldn't have more blatant advertising. At least Pokemon didn't blatantly advertise its collectible card game. At least it had stories.
Well, and the other thing was that it's much easier to write that than it is to write what they were doing in the earlier stuff.
I guess.
Which they had an actual story in the early years, like the first season or two.
There was fighting. There's always been fighting in Dragon Ball, but like they mixed it with other more humorous stuff.
Yeah. And then it just got boiled down to just, oh, let's have them scream for an episode and then
my time proclaim. It was He-Man and Transformers and G.I. Joe, and I didn't watch those either.
And don't get me wrong, I like Dragon Ball, and I enjoy Sailor Moon, but I also like stuff like Lupin the Third and earlier things.
I don't know anything about Lupin the Third and Vampire Hunter D, and like there's Tank Dominion Wars.
I'm just going to say, the only thing I know about Lupin 3 or 3rd is Cliffhanger. Did you ever play Cliffhanger?
I did not.
Okay, that was a Laserdisc game, like Dragon's Lair, except they took a mash of scenes from Lupin 3 and turned it into Dragon's Lair. That's one of the Laserdisc arcade. Everybody knows Dragon's Lair. Everybody knows Mad Dog McCree. Everybody knows Space Ace.
Yeah.
But they don't know there was Cliffhanger, and I had no idea what Lupin 3 was. I didn't learn about that until 10 years later when I was doing research. Oh, that was Lupin 3. Okay. Especially when he's peeling this guy's fingers off the car after he'd been crushed against the wall.
Lupin the Third is like
a thief thing. I know. It's sort of like Danger Diablo.
No, it's more of a huge playoff of that whole, like, that whole spy-thief motif of the 70s going on when you had all the best James Bond and things like that going. And
I want to see a Japanese version of Diabolik. You have no idea what I'm talking about, do you?
Diabolik? No, I've never heard of
that.
The
very last MST3K episode was based on the character Diabolik, who was made by the same guy who did Barbarella. But he was a thief, and he was a villain protagonist, and very evil. He was one of the rare comics in which you had the evil guy, a really evil, nasty, amoral guy, as the lead in the comic. And of course, they couldn't keep it up, and they started giving him slightly less evil, but he was still evil, you know. And one of the things about the movie is that they were confused about whether Diabolik was supposed to be the hero or the thing, and he was doing all this nasty stuff. So that's the hero? What's it called? Diabolik murders more people in the name of sex.
Mm-hmm.
It's the last episode. You gotta watch it, even if you don't like MST3K. It's hilarious. Anyways, getting back to your little cultural rant. Go ahead. You were talking about Lupin the Third, and then you were getting somewhere.
Oh, I mean, and like, stuff like Lupin the Third is, people have often noted that one as inspiring, like the creators of Cowboy Bebop, Fooly Cooly, just to name a few, Samurai Champloo, a lot of those guys quote Lupin the Third when they talk about their inspirations.
Nowadays it's Akira. And that, by the way, I think that's the demarcation in which anime became cool again when they released it, and I saw it in the theaters in the United States, Akira. And by the way, I prefer their pronunciation, because he was screaming out, Kaneda! Kaneda! And then when they redubbed it again, sort of, quote-unquote, fixing the dialogue and all that, Canada! And he keeps on yelling out, Canada! Canada!
I've never heard the redub. That sounds awful.
Well, the thing is, that's how it's supposed to be. That's how it's supposed to be pronounced. Unfortunately, they didn't realize how stupid it sounded. They should have just kept it at Kaneda and changed. You see, what happens is the redub made a lot of the movie make more sense, right? Even though I could tell what was going on from the original 1988 English dub. But maybe I should just listen to it in Japanese with English subtitles. I'll probably say Kaneda, but at least it'll be surrounded by a bunch of other Japanese words that I won't recognize, and it'll sort of meld in there. But what's it called? I'm glad they didn't have a line in which you had to say, "Oh, Kaneda," because that would have been just embarrassing. I'm pretty sure you two saw Akira.
Yes.
Okay.
That's a classic too.
So aside from aside from Pillars of Eternity, I haven't really played anything else. I haven't even had a chance to play a lot of Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2. I still have not gotten the new Xbox One game, the time when Quantum Break. Although I want to, like I said last week, the live-action episode sounds great. So, yeah, and Remedy has that little thing. They make everything cinematic. Like I said, when you played Alan Wake, it was sort of like playing Lost, because they had the same opening title. Dun-dun, last time on Alan Wake.
Yeah.
So,
the episodic style. That's what I love. I love that about Remedy games.
So, TJ, I know that you've been playing Dark Souls 3, and you wrote your review, and you talked about how disappointed you were, how it wasn't nearly as big enough as you thought it was going to be, how the weaponry was really limited, and the graphics were 1995-ish. It was just a big waste of time, and it was the biggest disappointment you had since Black and White, right?
So yes, Bizarro TJ wrote that review.
So, anyways, the exact opposite, I'm pretty sure, was your reaction to it. So, wait, I didn't actually get to read the review. All I know is from your effusive praise of it last week, what is your scale? Is it 5-5 or 10-10 or what?
Arcade Sushi uses a 10 out of 10, and I gave it a 9.5.
Okay. That's sort of like saying, well, you know, there was a graphical glitch here.
Yeah, the only thing that kept Dark Souls 3 from having a 10 out of 10 for me was that they reused a couple places that they'd been to in a few older games, and that the boss fights were not...
I heard about that. A lot of people just thought of that as an homage. Like, well, yeah, this is from Bloodborne. Oh, yeah, this is from Dark Souls 1.
Yeah, and the boss fights were another thing. The boss fights, they're super hard the first time.
Yeah, but I heard that was a legitimate critique about that. That's the only bad thing I heard about was the boss fights. Although it was more of a disappointment than actually being bad, right?
Just a disappointment, because they have a pattern, and so once you beat the boss the first time, it's super easy to do it again.
So you're saying that the mooks are easier to beat, or harder to beat than the boss? Here's the thing. Maybe you've been playing Dark Souls so long that you just are basically an expert at it, you know, and it's like, oh, this.
Well, no, because there's distinctly enemies in the game. Like, there's just knights running around in a lot of the, in several parts of the world that you come across. And those guys are a pain in the ass, because they have so many different ways to attack you.
Oh, God, it sounds like the knights in Halo 5.
One of the parts of parrying in Dark Souls 3 is that you can parry a single... They kept this in Dark Souls 3. If an enemy attacks you with a single-handed attack, you can parry it. If they double-hand it, then it'll swing right through your guard. And so for some of these guys where they just attack so fast, it's hard to judge where that's going to come from, because they don't attack the same way every time.
So who was your main? I mean, did you say? I mean, you said that you were going to try a magic user next.
I've been bouncing back and forth between a knight and a sorcerer.
Okay.
I love the knight because it's about... I would recommend the knight to anyone that was starting the game, because the knight has high vitality. You can raise them to have... They already start with a pretty good strength and dexterity, but you can raise it even further so they can use most of the weaponry in the game. It's just a good starting class as far as health and versatility.
By the way, Scott, my wizard in Pillars of Eternity has a 19 intelligence to start with.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, and also I made sure he had lore.
Yeah.
Not dateable lore.
Yeah, I know.
Lore sucks. How about you, Scott? What have you been playing?
Well, I haven't had too much time to play anything other than Minecraft and some Civ, so that's what I've been playing. Yeah, just
I ask you a question. When you're playing Minecraft, how often do you play with friends?
If they log on, because we have a private server, and so whenever they log on, we'll play together. We also do UHC like every once a month or something like that, so we'll play that as well. But a lot of times I'm just kind of by myself on the server, but they do occasionally log in and we'll talk or maybe go check something out or whatever.
Okay. So, we're going to jump into game news. GameStop to launch video game publishing division, and this comes from the Associated Press. the retailer best known as for selling games, announced plans Monday to launch a new division called Game Trust that will help distribute and market them. Game Trust will initially publish games from a line of developers that include the creators of Trine, Deadlight, and the Ratchet & Clank series, which I think is, without looking later into the article, that's, is it Insomnia, or is it the other one?
Ratchet & Clank is Insomnia.
Oh, that's right. Why did I think Insomnia also did Trine? No, that's Frozenbyte. Anyway, Mark Stanley, and it's Stanley, not Stanley. I went back and forth on that. It's Stanley. Or maybe it's Stanley. I don't know. It's Mark Stanley. It's Stanley with the L and the E reversed. Anyway, my vice president of internal development of GameStop said that unlike a traditional video game publisher relationship with a game creator, Game Trust developers will retain creative control over their work. Quote, clearly, from the pedigree of these first four partners that we've signed on, they're not going to let a bad game go out the door, he said in an interview. Game Trust developers are in Helsinki, Finland-based Trine developer, Frozenbyte. Irvine, California-based God of War, Chains of Olympus developer, Ready at Dawn Studios. Madrid, Spain-developed Deadlight studio Tequila Works, and Ratchet & Clank creator Insomniac Games, which has studios in Burbank and Durham, North Carolina. GameStop announced in January it was publishing Song of the Deep, a side-scrolling adventure from Insomniac Games about a young girl who goes searching underwater for her at-lost sea fisherman father. I saw that at E3 last year, in fact.
How'd it look?
It looked beautiful. It's an underwater game. It's so a lot of the graphics are simple yet complex, and by that I mean you have a limited field of vision. I mean, well, it's not limited, but you know, but you're going through these underwater. There's these giant structures because basically this is after the end. This is a post-apocalyptic game. I don't know if it's Earth, by the way. I don't remember if it was Earth or not, but ecological disaster. Everything's underwater, you know. And the problem is that you have to be careful of not only the dangers down there, but also losing oxygen and stuff like that. So it looked really, really pretty, but what would you expect from Insomniac Games?
Mm-hmm.
Deadlight has become, you know, Deadlight, it's funny. Deadlight was a mediocre reviewed game, but everybody loves it. You know, it's, for those who don't know, it's that, it's sort of like an adult apocalyptic version of Limbo, in which, you know, you're a shadow, basically, more or less, and it's a side-scrolling game, and you have to come across these people who are in a post-apocalypse. You know, it's not a zombie apocalypse. It's just a breakdown of society. So you have these people who are shooting you and stuff like that. Actually, I think it was sort of like Limbo meets Shadow Complex.
Hmm.
Of course, everybody knows Trine. Trine is another side-scroller. And God of War Chains of Olympus is, I believe, the Vita version of God of War. Or is it the PSP
version? It's the PSP version.
Right. So, this is interesting because GameStop is a distributor. And now they're gonna cut out the middleman and actually publish these games. And I can see the appeal because what they're saying is that these guys are going to make games. We're going to leave them alone, and they're going to make the games, and we're going to sell them directly to you. Yeah.
It sounds like a smart idea because they need to diversify what they're doing to in order to stay relevant and stay in business.
Yeah, they started doing digital games a while ago, like 2 years ago, but that hasn't caught on, selling digital games. I mean, they do sell what they do sell is consoles, which you can't sell digitally. You can't. I'd like the Xbox X2. Can I download that? Oh no, I have to go and pick it up. Okay. I can't download the PlayStation 5, really? Oh, okay. And they also sell these cards for kids. You know, you want your kid to be able to buy stuff on PSN or Xbox Marketplace. Instead of giving your credit card, you give them a $25 gift card for Steam and what's it called? So GameStop also is very handy in selling those, you know, and also controllers and all that stuff. But we're seeing more and more games go to the digital way. I mean, I bought Garden Warfare 2 digitally. You know, because I hate having to look for the disc, and sometimes you have that disc is dirty, and we all hate that, you know, and you can never have a disc is dirty on digital.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. That's why I like digital so much, not have to worry about losing the discs or change a disc, you know, like the games that used to have multiple discs.
Although I don't mind discs that much. I just mean, you know, there's the added insurance that, you know, you don't have to worry about that. Other games are going to buy the disc of, you know. Although I will say this, a lot of PR people are sending games digitally because they don't have to send you the physical media anymore.
Yeah,
you know, saving them money.
It's a very rare thing that I ever get a physical copy for review anymore.
So, I guess that's all we can really say about this, except, you know, I would like to see what GameStop is like 10 years in the future, because unlike Blockbuster, they have been thinking about this. You know, Blockbuster, the revolution took them by surprise. Netflix just absolutely killed them, and one of the cruelest irony for Blockbuster was guess who was offered Netflix first for their digital distribution, and Blockbuster said no.
People will never get tired of going to a store and smelling everything and having a physical copy of a movie in their hands.
Well, that's not entirely untrue, you know. I mean, I do like... Hey, who doesn't like that plastic smell of a new console?
But it is untrue enough to end an entire franchise.
I guess, but I'm just saying, you know. But the thing is that, you know, here's the thing. Netflix wanted to use Blockbuster's distribution, right? Because they have the movies for rent, right? Mm-hmm. Say, you know, we're going to do this mailing rental thing. How do you think? And Blockbuster said no. So they started their own distribution, and then boom. Netflix started doing Netflix streaming. And the funny thing is that Enron was in talks with Blockbuster, if I remember this correctly, to sell streaming, and Blockbuster said no. So, but then again, you have to keep in mind something. Enron also wanted to trade Weather at one point. they thought, we're not going to trade electricity, now we're going to trade Weather.
How do you trade Weather?
Oh, well, it's a whole, what's it called? It's futures. Here's the thing. Everybody out there, go rent Enron, the smartest guys in the room. Not only will it be very, very enlightening, it'll also make you want to punch your TV. Because these guys are creeps. If you wanted to see people that are absolutely evil, because I'm not going to turn this into the Enron thing, but the Enron podcast. But at one point, they were deliberately stopping power going to California, so they could create artificial brownouts. And at one point, you have the actual recordings of these jerkasses talking about how grandma's not going to get her electricity this year. And while you have scenes of these hospitals, which don't have power, having to deal with this crap. So, yeah. If you ever wanted to see true evil and wanted to see... And I'm glad that guy committed suicide. There's this one mysterious guy who went off to divorce his wife and went to Utah with a stripper girlfriend and lives in a gigantic ranch behind... I forgot his name. But, yeah. No, trust me. You'd wish that fire ants would eat them alive inside a coffin. that's how bad these people were. Just go rent Enron, the smartest guys in the room. I think it's on Netflix streaming still. I can't watch it because it gets me too angry. even now. I think it won the Oscar in 2005. Best documentary. I'm not quite sure. I know it did win the Best Picture. I think it was 2005. Long after, And here's the thing. Don't trust corporations with anything, because they gave them something called mark-to-marketing, which said they could make their stock price whatever they wanted based on what they thought they were going to be making.
That's right. I remember that. And
yeah. Like power plants in India, which were a complete and utter disaster and didn't make a dime. So anyways, we're getting way off the subject here. Okay, TJ, take the next one.
Alrighty. Okay. Sources leak potential and Nintendo NX and controller specs online from Daily Star. As we edge closer and closer to E3, rumors surrounding Nintendo's upcoming NX console are intensifying as every day passes. The latest rumors come from a giant info dump by a trusted NeoGAF user, backed by three different sources, and paint a picture of an involved Wii U machine which uses a similar second-screen controller. Interestingly, though, the latest intel suggests that this controller would merge a handheld and a home console into one unit, allowing you to play NX games anywhere you want, a bit like a Sony PlayStation Vita.
Which is bullshit, but we'll continue on.
The NX is going to have a screen controller, whether it's optional or standard, we don't know, and can be used anywhere to play your home console games. The controller itself will not have any processing capabilities. It'll essentially be a dummy Vita. It'll likely have basic OS functions to access the NX consoles from anywhere, like a tiny CPU. Nintendo will use enhanced Wii U gamepad streaming tech and allow the controller to be taken anywhere, connect to the NX console at home, and likely through a Wi-Fi or personal hotspots, and the NX console will likely have to be in standby mode. Basically, it's remote play built into the box. There's been plenty of rumors about the long-awaited Nintendo NX for many months, but nothing concrete so far. It's also been rumored that the NX could output games at 4K resolution, which could prove stiff competition for the 4K-ready PS4 that's also supposed to launch this year.
Now, the next item is going to tie into that, but I want to say something about the Vita. That does not work unless you're like in front of the PlayStation 4. The signal from Sony to the PlayStation 4 to the Vita is very weak, and it's hard to do that remote play on the Vita. Although, why mess with a good thing? You know, having the second screen, on your controller. I mean, the tablet controller was always a good idea. Go ahead, Agent.
I have already seen that they also just confirmed the PS4.5 today. It's they're codenaming it the Neo, apparently.
Oh dear God. No.
Yeah. No.
You know what? I can just see it now. What's it called? They'll have a commercial of that console coming up, and it'll be like, whoa.
Yeah, this is on Giant Bomb, and it does have a little screen cap of Neo from The Matrix, of course. But it's supposed to be an upgraded CPU, GPU, and RAM for this.
So the thing about that, before we get too far away from the Nintendo NX, is that, again, it's supposed to be forward compatible, which means that the games that run on the PlayStation, this new PlayStation, will be able to run on the original PlayStation 4, but it won't have as many features. It's sort of what's going on with the new 3DS, you know, in which the same cartridge will do different things on different machines.
Yeah.
So, the next item actually is related to this, which will deal with the merging of, which could be how they're going to be dealing with the NX controller being able to do remote play. Take it away, Scott.
Nintendo's cloud-like patent approved. This from Nintendo Enthusiast. Nintendo has been hard at work developing a patent that involves a cloud-like save system so that it can be utilized with the console and computer, and then passed along into the network and then into the cloud. Initially, the patent was denied for some reason, so Nintendo had to go back to the drawing board and fix a few things within the patent. The patent has now been given a notice of allowance, however, which means that it has been approved by the USPTO, and now the only thing that remains is the issue of the patent.
Yeah, the patent trademark office.
Right.
So, I'm wondering if this cloud may not only just do the saves, but also enable that to be able to remotely play your NX in standby mode in your house while, say, you're in the town, what's it called? Next town over, right?
Yeah.
That could be a possible.
That would be good. People would like that.
I mean, they've been developing this. I've never really understood the appeal of remote play as far as just the console stuff.
I don't know. I know a lot of people who'd want to play Harvest Moon or stuff like that away. You know, one of those games like Stardew Valley, in which basically you're just checking up on your characters and doing their things. And then it's like you're in a hotel and you say, oh, let me just check my Stardew Valley guy. Okay, okay, I'm going to put it away now. I could see. Let me ask you, hey, Scott, would you do that if you had something like a Harvest Moon or one of those games, you know, in which...
Maybe not Stardew, because that one isn't as easy to drop and get out of.
I'm talking about Harvest Moon, something a little bit easier. Right.
Yeah, I know what you mean, though. But there are games where that I'm like in the middle of, and like to be able to play it, you know, away from the computer and you know away from them, and to have that save game and stuff. So yes, I would like that feature. So hopefully that's what they'll do.
Well, that's the big thing is having the save. Maybe with the new NX, you could load your save from someone who already owns the game. On a different NX, so you visit your friend in another town, and he has the game, and you just load your save from your thing, so you don't have to start over, you know?
Right.
And just play it on their machine, and then save your game, and then when you get back home, your save is waiting for you. I mean, that's what they're doing basically with the Windows 10 Xbox One compatibility, cross-platform thing. So it allows you to do that, except you're just doing your save game from your PC.
I would like to be able to play Minecraft, like on my PlayStation, and then one of my friends.
Do you play your Minecraft on PS4?
No, I would like to though, because I have my brother-in-law and one of my daughter's friends has Xbox with Minecraft, but we don't. So if we got PlayStation 4 and it was doing the whole cross-platform thing, we could all play.
Well, Windows 10 version of Minecraft is doing that. So you could use the Windows 10 version of Minecraft to do that.
Yeah, they want to be on their console, though.
So it would be on the Xbox One, yeah. It would.
Yeah, okay.
They're cross-saved. That's one of the big features of Xbox One and Windows 10, which has some people annoyed for whatever reason because of the programming language and all that stuff, and they think Microsoft's trying to take over. No, they're just trying to boost the Xbox One.
Yeah.
I guess one of the problems I see with remote play right now is that it's such a limited application, and because of lag issues between latency issues between the connection to whatever you're playing on and the device itself. This is a thing where it's still early, and this is basically the 2-pound cell phone of where we're at right now with remote play.
What's wrong with a 2-pound cell phone?
And I'm sure that one day in the future we'll be able to look back at remote play and tell the children about, you know, back in my day we could only play strategy games on remote play.
You know, and back in my day all the phones were rotary. So. Just so you know, and by the way, well, no, that's not true. We did have remote controls, but my TV didn't. I had to get up and change the channel with my...
Yeah, I had a literal clicker. It clicked when you clicked the clicker.
Oh, was it just two channel up and channel down?
It was three buttons.
Off, channel up, and channel down.
Something like that, yeah. It would make the little clang, clang, little clicking noise. It had like a little metal rod in there, so it was like those little tuning forks, and you would... Bing, and it was just this metallic, like, cling. It was just the craziest old piece of crap ever.
Yeah. You know, by the way, they were charging for touch-tone service long into the 2000s, despite the tech having infiltrated every part of the planet, in which who was using a rotary phone anymore? By the way, I'm glad the rotary phones... Because if you ever use a rotary phone, eventually you get that pain. You ever get the rotary phone pain?
No. I think I know what you mean, where your finger starts hurting.
Yeah, because what happens is your finger is in the dial, and it's going back and forth. It's like, ow, 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 ow. It starts getting sore if you're doing a lot of phone calls. Oh, God, imagine what it was like to be a telemarketer back then if you had to do all your numbers manually.
I think the
Now I have to do 555-1000. Okay, 555-1001. 555-1002. I know it's probably automated, but I'm just saying there were some people who didn't have that luxury of automated dialers. Now I'm thinking about the automated dialer episode of The Simpsons when Homer was using it. If you'd like, send it to Happy Guy. Did you remember that episode?
Yeah.
And the scene that everybody remembers is Ned keeps on picking up. And Ned keeps on picking up as it keeps on dialing him. So, yeah. So, getting back to the NX, it looks like there is going to be something worthwhile to check out at E3. But the problem is I don't think Nintendo's going to be on the show floor. I hope they are. If they're going to be unveiling a new console.
Are you saying they don't have a booth, or...?
I don't know. I know that Microsoft and Sony are still going to be there. EA is not. Ubisoft is not. Disney is not. I don't know if Nintendo is going to be on the floor, because last E3 it was just a complete waste of time, and all anybody cared about was Super Mario Maker, and even that was bleh on the show floor.
Mm.
I mean, you could talk to Paul and talk to him about having me. The entire thing that he did all show was wait online for the Disney characters, and then he had me waiting online for the last 2 hours of the show to get a specific Disney. He wanted me to get Mickey.
Hmm.
For Infinity. So, yeah. We're going to move on to the next... now, I don't know which episode we discussed this in. It might have been the episode that wasn't able to do because of the crappy thing. But we have been following this story. ARK Survival Evolved lawsuit settled, and this comes to us from PC Gamer. ARK Survival Evolved developer Studio Wildcard was sued late last year by Trendy Entertainment, the studio behind Dungeon Defenders, and also Dungeon Defenders 2, which is now free to play, over allegations that former Trendy president Jeremy Stieglitz tried to recruit other developers at the studio to the ARK project. That, Trendy said, was in direct violation of his contract, which forbade him... Ah, God. You know, PC Gamer, learn English. It's which forbade him, not forbid him. Forbid is the present tense. Forbade is the past tense. From poaching his former employees after he left the studio. The stakes were high as the language was harsh. A, quote, motion for writs of attachment and garnishment was filed on April 6th, which claims Stieglitz owed Trendy Entertainment owner Insight Ventures at least $26 million and predicts that the final figure could be much higher. Quote, this amount does not include the substantial damages that Insight occurred as a result of Stieglitz's failure to honor the right of first refusal, nor does it take into account the tens of millions of dollars which Wildcard has unjustly enriched by using Trendy's intellectual property. It also accused Stieglitz and his wife Susan of some pretty shady dealings, including some including stashing their assets away in international banks. The plaintiff believes that the Stieglitzes, oh God, that's going to be a really weird sitcom. The Stieglitzes will continue to remove their assets from the Florida until they are effectively judgment proof, which means they're gonna embezzle the shit out of it and send it to a Swiss bank. That's basically what they're saying. The Stieglitzes will stop at nothing to block Trendy and Insight from successfully collecting their debts. Despite that nasty rhetoric, a filing made yesterday indicates that a, quote, final written settlement agreement was reached less than 1 week later. The terms of the settlement weren't disclosed, but a direct message from Susan Stieglitz posted on Reddit by Kotaku says, we ended up settling for $40 million. That's a pile of money, but far short of what Trendy and Insight were actively apparently seeking. According to a tweet from April 12th, they had originally asked for $600 million in damages. Now, I'm going to preface this by telling you guys, and I think I told you this guy's the last time that this guy Stieglitz is a creepy a-hole. He is just the worst in all ways. I mean, he had sexual harassment suits against him. He did some shady stuff, which I don't want to get into. But here's the thing that ARK Survival Evolved was facing death. If remember. This would have killed ARK Survival Evolved, period. It was sort of like, and I think we discussed this, if you remember, it was sort of akin to what was going on with 2Human. Remember, with 2Human, they were forced to recall and destroy all copies of 2Human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ARK Survival Evolved was facing this. And those are the time in which the previous week we had talked about ARK becoming this, I actually wrote a Game Watcher, so this tells you how long ago it was. That this was actually, they were starting their own esports, and it was just getting kicked off, you know, and all that stuff. So they actually, the players were caught in the middle of this, and so at least they'll still have their game. And I really don't care how much money those two people lose, because they'll make more, and B, they're creepy. So, anyways. I yield the floor from that little from staying on the soap crate there.
Oh my gosh! The dude does sound like okay. Anytime that you're trying to stash your assets, that's a pretty good sign that you knew you were doing something wrong, and everyone against you is probably. I wouldn't say they're in the right, but they have a case.
Yeah, I mean. Going back to 2013, they were talking about the studio from hell, which was actually Trendy Entertainment, and that was because of Stieglitz, which is why he left. Strange Stars made Trendy the studio from hell when they were developing Dungeon Defenders 2. He would harass female things. He was quoted for calling for ass and boobs. He was just a lot of stuff that was just creepy and strange, and when they finally kicked him out, he stole stuff, and he also stole employees, and that's why he's having to pay up now. And that's why he also stole assets, which was the biggest part, because the reason why 2Human had to be destroyed was because they were illegally non-contractually using the Unreal Engine into human.
I stashed my copy since we had that conversation.
No, if you bought it, you can keep it. It's not a car recall.
You never know. Some suit from Unreal might come into my house and just hit my disc with a hammer.
You know, I still have my some games on my Xbox 360, which were taken away from the marketplace. Like, I still have Yaris on my 360. For those of you who don't remember Yaris, it was that really, really, really bad adver game. That was...
Oh, my...
Yeah, I still have that. And I also have Lost Cities, which is based on the card game, and what happens was that they lost their license to have the video game version of it, so it was taken off Xbox Marketplace, but I still own it. I still have
it. Oh, my God, were you paying attention when Konami pulled the Silent Hill demo PT?
Oh, yeah.
And so people that had it on their PS4 were selling those PS4s for, like, thousands of dollars.
Yeah, it wasn't even a demo. It was just a small vertical slice.
Yeah, and so it resulted in Konami putting it back on the net to pretty much undercut those people and ruin them.
Well, we have to say a prayer for Silent Hills. Long may it rest.
Yeah, but...
For those who don't know, PT was effectively the playable demo for Silent Hills. It was sort of like a concept game, which then, in turn, PT inspired other games.
Yeah. And on the other bright lining of that, Kojima formed his own studio, and he and Del Toro are back in talks, so they're eventually going to work on a collaboration together.
Yeah, it just can't be called Silent Hill.
Yeah.
And they can't call it PT either. But you know what? You choose any other two letters.
But Guillermo del Toro is a genius.
Actually, knowing Kojima, he might call the game F.U.
Yeah, and even if it's not like Silent Hills, Guillermo del Toro is a genius, and Hideo Kojima is a great director.
Well, the problem
with
Guillermo del Toro being a genius is that this isn't his first time. He had two games that never got released. One was called Insane. Remember that game? That was his first. Mm-hmm. And that collapsed. And then he was going to do a different game. I forgot the name of it. And that collapsed. And now this game, Silent Hills, it collapsed. So he sort of has a little running thing of bad luck there.
Yeah, but that's really like... Okay, so Insane sort of can be traced back to him. But the other stuff is just mostly bad luck. And...
You say that like it's not something to be worried about. Scott, what do you think?
But when you put a director that's as smart as Kojima behind it...
I guess. Scott?
Yep.
Just your opinion.
Well, apparently this guy's a jerk, and I don't know if he'll be able to pay up the $600 million in damages to Trendy, but...
Well, unfortunately, he's not going to have to. He's just going to pay up $40
million. Oh, okay. I don't know, I guess there's not too much else to say. I mean, it's kind of a shame when you have this really good game and it's made by jerks. I mean, it kind of reminds me of L.A. Noire. And speaking of studios from hell,
Bondi. I think it was called Team Bondi?
Yeah, I heard that that place was pretty terrible. People weren't allowed to go on vacation or anything.
Yeah, 80-hour weeks, or 60 to 80-hour weeks, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So it's terrible when you have these good games and it seems to be made by terrible companies and you feel dirty buying their game.
Yeah, you know, the thing about that, and I was watching Vsauce, which is a channel on YouTube, and they were talking about the selling of happiness, and one of the things they noted was that the thing is that people are... No, it wasn't Vsauce. It was a different thing in which they were talking about how happiness in the movie Inside Out was actually the villain. And actually, you know, I saw her as the villain in that movie, too. Because she was pushy, and she was getting her own way, and she was destroying everything, because it was all about her, right? Anyways, so
I don't think she was the villain. She has basically what a lot of people will do when they have this focus on what they're trying to do. It wasn't about her. It was about the girl. I forgot the girl's name now. But that was her focus. And everybody else could just, you know, screw off if they weren't going to make this girl happy. And that was her... They get tunnel vision.
No, the thing is that everything was about being happy. And you're forgetting that, you know, you have to be sad at a lot of times. But here's my point, though, getting back to that. And he noted that right now all we do is sell happiness. And we tell everybody that it's bad to be sad.
when it's actually a perfectly human thing. You know, you can't be happy all the time. So, getting into video games and how this is connecting. Now what studios do is that they have beer and they have ping pong and they have video games in the studios so that they think they're having fun, but they're actually being tricked into having 13, 14-hour days and very little sleep. But they think they're having fun because they have beer and they have ping pong and they have the fridge over there, you know. And really what they're doing is they're burning out without realizing it, because all they're being told is to be happy, 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 right? You know, and they're actually tricking these developers into working into outrageous hours without them realizing it because they're too happy until they have the mental breakdown.
Yeah, you gotta be balanced. You gotta have these other emotions and whatnot. And I think villains tend to not be able to do that, to incorporate other emotions into them, and that's why they're so unbalanced to begin with.
You see, the thing I'm contrasting it to, instead of them berating their employees and, you know, like the Stieglitzes did and what Team Bondi did, now they're happying them to death by making them not realize that they're working themselves to death.
It was a terrible environment, very negative.
And that's a hard, like, would you rather be yelled at and work 13 hours or be happy and work 13 hours? I don't know.
How about neither? Happy. How about just working 60 hours? I mean, or 40 hours, I'm sorry. Wow, did I just say I wanted to work 60 hours? No, I meant 40 hours. Oh, dear. Anyways, so that's this week's news. And the question of the week is, what game are you looking forward to this coming summer? So, Scott, do you have your eye on any game?
Yes, I do, and they're on the PlayStation 4. I think it's called I Am Satsuma, and it's basically kind of harkens back to Chrono Trigger, at least the gameplay mechanics do. And the graphics are, of course, you know, current. I mean, I think they're very current. They look awesome. And the battle is like a top-down, and you see the enemies on the field, and you can do combo attacks like you can in Chrono Trigger. The story, though, sounds very dark, but I'm very interested in it, but I have to get a PlayStation 4, so I'm like, I have to wait for that 4.5 or whatever. If I'm gonna get PlayStation 4, I might as well get the most current one I can. I might as well.
Right. How about you, TJ? Or maybe TJ's looking up what he wants. I'll go next.
No Man's Sky, easily.
Oh, okay. I was wondering if... See, the thing about No Man's Sky is I'm a little bit wary of it. I just don't know. I mean...
It could be really good, or it could be...
It could be Spore, again.
It could be really good, or it could be mediocre, which would be the worst thing it could be.
Yeah. Mediocre.
Yeah, and either way, it's going to be interesting to see how that comes out. I don't even know if I'm really that interested in, like, having the game just because I want to play it, so much as I'm interested in seeing how it does and how people react to it.
Right. I'm looking forward to Deus Ex, Mankind Divided. I mean, I'm sort of meh on Human Revolution. I mean, let me put it this way. I replayed Deus Ex, the first one, lots and lots and lots of times. And I did replay, you know, Invisible War a few times, if only because there was no other sequel. But I played Deus Ex much more. Human Revolution, I've only replayed, like, 1.5 times. I haven't even gone through my second time. So I'm looking at Mankind Divided, and this time they're not going to outsource anything, so hopefully it'll be fun. The question I want to ask you guys is, are you looking forward to Final Fantasy 15?
No.
I'm not sold on it yet. I played both the demos, and the best. It is a very beautiful world, and it's got a very wide variety of new things going on in it that they really haven't done in other Final Fantasy games. But the
they have freaking cars.
What's wrong with cars?
It can't be fantasy if you have a mother effing car.
Wait a minute. Final Fantasy has gone into science fiction plenty of times. Come on.
Yeah, that's the problem.
I mean, you've had steampunk, you've had science fiction, you've had fantasy, you've had people going into space. I mean, you know, So what if they have cars? I mean,
it just kills it. It really does. It just, like, no.
See, this is what ruined Final Fantasy The Spirits Within for Scott, because it had cars in it.
No, Spirits Within was fine. I was fine with that.
I loved the movie, by the way, just so you know, but it did have cars. It had futuristic cars, but it had cars. Actually, you know what? Now that I think about it, they were mostly going around in these helicopters in that movie. Dropships, yeah. How about Mirror's Edge?
I'm looking in this Game Informer, and it's showing me pictures of it, and I see this shot of a freaking car sitting there like a damn commercial, you know?
I would love that, actually, if you had a car commercial for the new Subaru and it's like a scene from the game. Hey, look, they do it all the time for James Bond. Every time there's a James Bond movie out, they're going to do the advertisement for whatever car that's being shown off in that movie.
I can't confirm this, but I'm almost certain that they have talked about. I think they are producing a car based on the one made in the game.
Well, no, I mean, that's
shock.
No, you could do that with anything. I mean, is it mass produced?
No, I think they're doing it in limited
quantities.
Then who cares?
No, then it doesn't really count. Unless it's mass-produced, you know, it doesn't count. How about Mirror's Edge Catalyst?
Well, I was going to say one last thing on Final Fantasy XV is that it feels like The Witcher went steampunk.
Well, see, that's the thing, though, because the Final Fantasy XIII was such a disastrous game, really, really bad, and they tried three times to fix it, and they couldn't fix it any three times. So now, this could kill the series if it's bad, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, it won't, because Final Fantasy VII Remake is coming, and if that's
No. I'm talking about killing the series. I mean, any future games. You know, I mean, Final Fantasy XIV, they managed to make it at least an average MMO instead of a terrible one, you know. I wonder if they're going to have Chocobo Racing in 15.
Yeah, they do have Chocobos, so it's very possible. but it really does, like, from the combat that I had, it was very... You know what it is? It's like Kingdom Hearts put in a final... The Kingdom Hearts Final Fantasy.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't see the release date for Kingdom Hearts 3 in 2016.
And it, like, there's a lot of things that you can do with it where, like, you can change your weapons on the fly and you can cast spells on the fly, and it does really... It feels like an amalgam of all sorts of action RPG things.
Oh, that could be a disaster. Whenever you do an amalgam like that, it could either be brilliant or a disaster.
Yeah.
So, like I said, what about Mirror's Edge? That's getting a reboot of its own this summer.
Mirror's Edge Catalyst will probably be pretty fun, and I'll probably pick it up.
Okay. So, yeah. So let's talk about the Ghostbusters movie. No, I'm kidding. You know, if you go to YouTube, there's this channel called Midnight's Edge. They talk about in length about what's been going on behind the scenes with Sony in that movie, and your eyes will open on that. It's what kind of really insane crap is going on behind the scenes.
Like good crap or bad?
Bad crap. Really bad. Really, really, yeah. Really bad. Yeah. Let me put it this way. People who have worked on the film said all the jokes are in the trailer.
Wow.
What you see in the trailer is what you can expect from a film. Really bad. So, I don't know if I'm up for Gears of War 4, by the way. I just don't know. I mean, I got burned a little bit by Gears of War 2, and I didn't pick up Gears of War 3, and I never played Gears of War Judgment. I guess I'm not going to be able to... I'm not picking up Gears of War. Okay. But it's sad, because I really enjoyed the first one. You know?
I think I've made it clear that I don't like first-person shooter games.
It's a third-person, so...
Yeah.
It's not first-person at all. As a matter of fact, it popularized active reload and cover-based mechanics. You know, it's not the first to do either, but it is the one that made it an essential part of shooters and RPGs now. Action RPGs like Mass Effect, having the cover, you know, hiding behind cover and all that stuff, yeah.
Hell, I would still say that Gears of War is the one that does it best.
Yeah, I mean, Gears of War 2 didn't even change it, so I guess you could say that. So, and again, there's Doom. I know Scott has no interest because that definitely is a first-person shooter. But how about you, TJ?
I've been following it and I've been looking at what they've got going on in it. I played Doom 2 a lot when I was younger, and. I completely skipped Doom 3 because that was a...
That was better off. That was just a monster box.
Yeah, it was...
Monster closet, I'm sorry.
Doom 3 was right on par with the movie.
At least the movie only had 5 minutes of first person.
Do you remember the movie that hosted The Rock?
Yeah.
I read the book, which was...
You know, there's
really
a movie
bad.
Out right now that's completely in first person. It's a total gimmick.
Hardcore Henry.
Yeah. It's okay. It's interesting. It's interesting. And it's actually in one shot, it makes it look like it's in one cut. Of course, they do stealth that when they do the whip pans, that's when they edit.
You know, I've been playing around with the idea of pitching one of my editors a review of Hardcore Henry as if it were a video game.
Oh, if it was a video game, it's really, really good. I mean, there's a lot of stunts in it that are really nice. The characterizations are flat, and a lot of the problem with the movie is a lot of the exposition is right at the end. And for the most of the movie, you don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
It's sort of like Half-Life in that way. Well, actually, Half-Life doled out the information a lot better, now that I think about it. See, that's how video games are better. They know how to deal out exposition. This movie just does it at the very last moment. And what really infuriates a lot of people, not me, but a lot of people are annoyed that this is what people are going to think video games are like.
Yeah, which is... Like I was gonna say, if I was gonna do a review on that game, it would probably get a 6.
Okay.
Maybe a 5. That game or that movie, it's interesting. It's interesting to see what a filmmaker can do with a bunch of GoPros and a bunch of stuntmen.
Well, it's like Unfriended, isn't it? I mean, Unfriended had the entire thing that it's on a computer screen.
Yeah, and you know? that was kind of nifty.
So, but, I will say, sorry, go ahead.
I think that the concepts presented in Hardcore Henry are better suited to a director that can actually do something ingenious with it.
Well, wasn't the director of Hardcore Henry the cameraman for, I think it was Christopher Nolan? No. No, some big director. Was it J.J. Abrams? Anyway, he worked under someone. It may have been Christopher Nolan, in which he was the cameraman or the AD, and he said, you know, what's called? Why don't you try it? You know, and I'll bankroll it. The thing is that when you say that Hardcore Henry is an experiment, it's literally an experiment.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's one of those films that almost feels like it was never meant to be released, but they decided to release it anyway. You know? And it's, like I said, it's interesting. It's a great, you know, it actually shows it's feasible if you get the right people to do it, you know? So, one last one that I'm going to bring up, and that's Homefront: The Revolution, and that looks like a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah, not at all.
I mean, it's like they didn't learn. I mean,
oh my god, they made a sequel to that?
Oh, they did. Actually, there's the second sequel. They did Homefront 2. And the problem with Homefront is the entire idea that North Korea is invading. That, for anybody who knows anything about North Korea, that's laughable. It's, for one thing... North Korea recently did something that pissed off China, and North Korea were like, "Oh, sorry, 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 China. We didn't mean to piss you off." Because what would really be a threat is if China invaded. Unfortunately, or fortunately, or whatever, we are selling things in China, and we don't want to piss them off. So any villains that you'll notice that there's no Chinese villains.
Mm-hmm.
No China. Well, by Chinese, I mean from China. You know, not Chinese Americans, but Chinese. There are no Chinese villains because we're selling. Where do you think Transformers gets all its movies from? Money from? You don't think we're actually seeing it in the U.S.? Let me put it this way: Batman v Superman actually was the fourth rated and came behind Barbershop the next day. The sequel to Barbershop. And it made $670 per theater, and Barbershop and made $2,700 per theater, which gives you an idea. Batman v Superman had the most precipitous drop 4 straight times for a comic book movie. However, it's made $800 million because guess where most of the people who are watching it are? It's worldwide grosses, including China.
Yeah.
They're spending on our shit, and that's why you'll never see a Chinese villain in a film, except for they had one in a movie that my the candidate, which my friend was the makeup artist for, but that was more about the Koch brothers than it was about China. So, anyways, like I said, you know, we're not gonna piss off the people who A, we're making a lot of money off of, and B, we owe a lot of money to. Like Bill Maher once said, he once opened up his fortune cookie and the fortune inside said, "Where's my money, you deadbeat?" So, anyways, we'd like to hear what game you're looking forward to that's a major game that's coming this thing. Oh, let me ask you a question. Scott, are you excited at all for the new Star Fox?
No, I have no idea, no.
You have no idea there's a new Star Fox coming out?
No, and I don't know if I'm interested or not. I'll have to, you know, wait and see when it comes out. And
well, I think it's coming out on the 22nd. I think it's coming out in the next week or so.
Yep, it's at the end of this month.
Yeah, I mean, it's
at the end of this week, I think.
It's yeah, April 21st, Star Fox Zero. And, you know, I remember someone on this podcast, and it wasn't either of you, I don't think, or maybe it was Scott, I don't know, who said that last year that Star Fox looked terrible. And that was last year, though. We can't judge, you know, a year later. Was it you, Scott? Did you see it? No.
No, I like the original.
I mean, everybody likes the Super Nintendo Star Fox. I'm talking about the new Star Fox. Then it wasn't you. It was somebody. I don't think it was Paul, though. I don't think Paul cares about Star Fox anymore. He cares about the other properties. But it's amazing that it took so long for Star Fox to come out, especially so late in the... You see, Star Fox needed to be done at the launch of the Wii U. Not now. And Platinum Games is doing Star Fox, by the way.
Well, it'll probably be decent then. I mean, I haven't really...
Actually, I'm looking forward to Platinum Games' Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game than
that
this.
That sounds real fun. I was on board as soon as they said co-op.
Well, didn't they also do the other Saturday morning cartoon game? It wasn't Transformers. That was someone else. Or was it Transformers? Yeah, Platinum Games did a Transformers game, didn't they?
That may be true.
I can look it up. But, yeah, Platinum Games seems to be doing all of the old Saturday morning cartoon games now, so I'm wondering if the next thing they're going to do is, like, He-Man. So, let's see. They also did Transformers and Devastation. Yeah. They also did Transformers. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, for those who don't know, they did Mad World, they did Bayonetta, they did Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
They have a pretty dang good lineup.
Yeah.
But
I still want to play Bayonetta 2, but I'm still not buying a Wii U just to play it. I loved Bayonetta. It's one of my favorite games ever. But and you know, by the way, you can tell they were spun off from the same people who did, of course, what's the name of that?
Devil May Cry?
Devil May Cry, right. Which is why a lot of the nicknames for Bayonetta is Diva May Cry. And I'm going to tell you something. Bayonetta has a shit ton of Western references in it.
Yeah.
Halo references and all that stuff, you know. Anyways, that's right. They're doing Scalebound as well. They're doing Scalebound. And that looks interesting. That's coming out next year, though. You know Scalebound, right? It's their dragon game in which you...
Yeah.
That's the one that everybody accused Platinum of being a traitor for just making it for the Xbox One. Despite the fact they're only doing Star Fox Zero for the Wii U and they're only doing Nier Automata for the PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
So they have their little deals. Although I will say Scalebound looks more promising, although, you know, the last time I played Star Fox, that was 20 years ago, even more than that, maybe 23 years ago. So...
I'll tell you what, if you want to have a good time, or at least have a nice little distraction for a moment, just go look up Platinum Games' Hideki Kamiya's Twitter, because he is an unabashed dick to anyone who is stupid to him, and, like, the fastest way to get blocked by anyone is to post any sort of question about Bayonetta 3 or anything to Hideki Kamiya. It's really funny.
Yeah, but, you know, I just want Bayonetta 2 on something I own. Maybe they'll make a PC version. That's the way around everything. You know, just make a PC version.
Get the emulator.
Anyways, we will see you next week.
All right. Happy gaming, everyone.
Have a good one.